Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Rob?
Today, Russell, I am feeling like we are family Today's guest, even though we've never met before, I don't even know if you've ever actually spoken on the phone or anything, but we've been talking for many months on email because her work was recently in the group show in Margate, Breakfast Under the Tree, and it was one of our favourite paintings in the show. And it was actually a hard show though, because I think all the paintings are basically our favourite paintings in the show because we love all the artists so much. But the painting that I'm talking about was called Chinese Takeout, and I love that painting so much. And there's something about the way that I felt with that work. It almost kind of became like family to me during the running of the show. And like, I know also the artist that we're about to speak to has a family member in that painting, but also in many of her paintings, and often includes friends and also some amazing Zoom portraits of people that she connects with over the computer. And I love this idea of like people sitting for portraits from afar, which is what we're doing today. So we are being linked to Los Angeles because we're on the eve of our guest's big solo show at Night Gallery, which opens, I think, this Saturday. So everybody in LA, you can get down to see this show. But anyway, I'm going to get on so we can actually start chatting to our guest. We would like to welcome to Talk Art, Susan Chen.
Yay, hi. It's so great to be here. No, I feel like I'm listening to Talk Art, but then I'm like, wait, it's going to be me on there. So it's like pretty surreal.
That's great. See, you're a listener to Talk Art. You keep up with it.
No, yes. I feel like I was listening when you guys had like three episodes, like really early on. And I just feel like at art school, for example, you get like the opportunity to go to like artists' studios, like Nicole Eisenman or like, you know, if you're lucky. Wow. And like a lot of the times I think about, because like art school is like ridiculously expensive now. And I'm like, oh, there are a lot of people who won't be able to like access these, like, you know, meet the artists or see their studios. And I feel like with, you know, like what you guys are doing, just, you know, podcasts with artists, it's like it just like makes it more accessible. Like you like let people go to people's studios that like maybe they can't go to art school, but they can still like meet the artist.
That's love it. That. That's an amazing review, Susan. Thank you so much. That is thrilling.
Five-star for you on the app.
So you're in Los Angeles right now because, as Rob was saying, your show, I'm Not a Virus, is about to open at Night Gallery. But you're normally based in New York, right?
Yes. So during COVID, I was actually painting in our garage in Hartford, Connecticut. And and then I came out here to open to install the show this week. I realized on the plane, like on the way here, that I probably haven't really like left the studio since like 2017, because I like went like through art school and then COVID happened, and then like I did a show and then I like kind of didn't have the experience, so like I forgot to give myself some time between like one show and another. And then so I went into this show and then I like delivered it, on the weekend and was like, oh, I have some like free time now. So yes, it's also kind of weird going from like hibernation during COVID where you're like alone all the time. And like with Night Gallery, I hadn't met like any of the team members or like even Davida who runs the gallery. Like I only like knew them through Zoom. So it was just like kind of fascinating to arrive and like meet everyone in person. And also just like coming out of hibernation, like everything feels like extra, like sensory heightened, totally. If that makes any sense. Like totally. We went to Universal Studios on Sunday and I just like at the end there's like a Jurassic Park ride and I was just like oh my god, like my sensories are already exploding. And then there's like a T-Rex that popped out and then there were like two T-Rexes and I was just like I can't even handle the one T-Rex, there's like two T-Rexes. But yeah, that was a moment where I was like, oh, COVID, you know, it really like heightens like real life.
Yeah. Wow. Well, we've had whole processes where we've set up with new agents and we've got book like deals and we've been doing all that with the tour card book and everything was done through Zoom. So when we finally meet everyone in person, it was like, oh, that's how tall you are. Oh, that's what you look like from the neck down. It's like you just get so used to seeing people on screen. It is very discombobulating.
It's so weird. And it's almost like that right now though, because when we were interacting for the group show in Margate, I feel like the emails you sent were so amazing because you love, I think you're like a natural writer as well somehow. You seem to be really like fond of like sort of really expressing yourself through words.
Yeah, so I feel like the problem with that is that it takes me a while to get back to email sometimes because when I write, I like actually like want to like say what, you know how some people reply text messages and they can just reply one words. I'm yeah. like, oh, I wish I could be that person. But it'll take me like a couple of months sometimes and then I'll reply to someone's message. It'll be like paragraphs and paragraphs.
Love it.
But yeah, maybe it's just like a style thing or something.
That's great. That's so when you were talking about your art school, this was your MFA that you were completing at Columbia, but you had to leave early because of COVID, as every other student did. And your living room then became your studio.
Oh, yeah, that was totally crazy. I feel like we sort of had a really dramatic, like, I mean, it was also the, you know, beginning of the pandemic. And it was like pretty terrifying. I think for me, it's kind of crazy because I've already lived through SARS. And I've lived like SARS in 2003 and I lived through swine in 2008. And so when this happened, I was like, oh, here we go again. But I know for like a lot of people that would have been like their first time. But I was like really nervous COVID would be as lethal as SARS because like if you caught SARS, you were like pretty much like you were definitely going to pass. But yeah, no, we got kicked out of school sort of in March and it kind of happened over like a 3-day weekend. Like that was how sort of like dramatic it was. And it was sort of like everyone like come to the studio, grab your stuff and go. And like, we don't know what's going to happen to your thesis show and like what's going to happen going forward. For me, I was like, oh, and there was like lockdown. And I was like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen. But I still need to work and I still need to paint. And then we just moved a lot of stuff from the living room. It was like, I want to say it was like 200 square foot, maybe. Like, yeah. And it sort of became the studio for a little, which I think for like people in the real world, they're like, you're a psycho. but it was like a really interesting experience. And then like, you know, at 7 or 6 or 7 PM, you'd hear like clap for care for the workers from like outside your window and people like banging pots and pans. So it was like painting in the studio and then like that would happen every night. And just making do, I guess.
There's something I really love about your work, which is the fact that I feel like you really bring us into your world, almost like we're in the room with you, which is kind of why I was referencing that idea of family, because whenever I saw the painting Chinese Takeout, I always felt like I was on the other side of the table with you and your boyfriend and your dog with the amazing chopsticks in the dog's paw. I mean, it's just the most genius moment in a painting. And even on the shelf behind, there was a reference to the whole COVID pandemic because you had a little tiny blue mask. But I really feel like there's a kind of openness in the work and this very like alive kind of way that you create the figuration, like the actual people within it. It's almost like they're just told you a joke or they're about to tell you a joke or they're sort of telling you a secret or something that, you know, maybe you're not aware of yet. Is that something that you are aware of as a painter or is it just like, is that just your style? Is that like an approach that you have trying to kind of make them quite sort of animated in a way and alive?
Well, first of all, that was very generous. I was like, it's really nice to hear about people like talk about your work. I feel like, you know, that's kind of hard. I don't think I think about the audience as much when I'm making the painting. I feel like for me, it's just like these little, like, I don't know, not like coincidence or like things happen. And I'm like, oh, this would make like a great painting. Like, we got like Chinese takeout one day and there were like these fortune cookies. And I just was like, oh, fortune cookies are so weird because like they're here everywhere. But then like in Asia, like you go to a restaurant and like no one will give you a fortune cookie. And then like I also just like remember reading about like the history of like the birth of the fortune cookie and like one of the like, I want to say one of the first like Chicago World's Fairs, you know, when they had like a Chinese pavilion in like Chicago. And that was sort of like a, I don't know, that was more like an exotic perspective, being like, oh, look, this is like what Asia looks like from the outside. But no, I don't know. I sometimes feel like the paintings are a bit like Alice in Wonderland-y. It's got that sort of, I don't know, maybe a little like childish, maybe like too cute sometimes or something. But
Never too cute.
I feel like
we
that
love
doesn't,
you.
Yeah. I don't know if that answers your question.
What Rob's saying, Rob's take from it, I find them, they feel quite uncomfortable at times, the characters. They feel that they're sat there and they look quite vulnerable. They're in strong stances, but they, to me, feel like they're... And I guess it's because you have a lot of strangers sit for you. There is like a vulnerability and an awkwardness that they have. And your characters, the figures, do carry this through.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I feel like painting is sort of like a lie that like tells the truth. And like, so when you first look at it, it's just like, I don't know, you're like, oh, some things are like made up or whatever. But then like, if you look closer, you're like, it's like, I don't know, maybe some artists are better at it, but I'm really bad at like hiding. Or it's just kind of like, or like I'm an overshare. Actually, someone in college once gave me like the Little Miss Overshare book for my birthday. And I was like, should I be offended? yeah, vulnerability. I think, well, working with sitters, I think because you're placed in a position where it's like all about you, it does start to feel performative. And sometimes I feel like when you're putting someone on the spot, like they can't, it's like awkward and it kind of forces you to sort of like make confessions.
Yeah. Well, it's like therapy, isn't it? I guess when you're with a sitter.
No, yeah. For sure. Totally. I think something that I find difficult is that when I talk to all the sitters, like, because I'm not a trained therapist. So then I really do wake up a lot of mornings and I'm like, I wonder what this person's doing. I wonder how this person is feeling. And just like learning, like going, because like the list has started to build up of all the people that I've worked with. Yeah. And just learning that like going forward, like you can't be everyone's friend. Otherwise, it kind of just like, it's like you can only give so much of yourself. But yeah, that's like a new thing that I'm like figuring out how to like go about.
But you, what I love though, is that you are allowing this vulnerability and awkwardness to come through in the painting when you're talking to your sitters, but also you're talking about your sharing stories. So much of the background, your works always feel so coded. There's so many things in there that you might understand, you might not understand, you'll get, but it's all very autobiographical. But when you are with your sitters, the background is telling the story, the landscapes, which actually was your, how you started painting was landscapes, right? But the landscapes that appear in the background of your works come from stories that these strangers, these sitters have told you that you then allow to become part of these works.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so for like an example, I would think of maybe as I did this painting of a policeman in my current show, and he's an Asian cop who lives in like upstate New York. And when we're on Zoom, I start like painting his face and he like tells me stories. And then like through Zoom, I find out that he's a night officer and he works like the 11 p.m. to like 8 a.m. shift. And so then the painting in my mind initially is like a daytime painting, suddenly like switches into a nighttime painting. And then, you know, like then I learned that he's the only officer who's allowed to ride his like a motorbike. And he's like super proud of that. And then suddenly, like, a bike becomes part of the story. And then they start sharing images of, like, where they work. And he's like, this is the police station. And, like, you know, this is, like, the entrance and stuff. And then so, like, slowly over Zoom, like, all these things start to come together. But the difficult, or, like, it's actually quite anxious because, you know, when you first start, I have no idea, like, what to expect. And you just, like, don't know what's going to happen. I mean, even with, like, there's a painting in here of this girl who's, like, wearing a beauty pageant sash. And when I first, like, met her, I had no idea that, like, apparently there's, like, Asian beauty pageants in every state in, the like, the United States. Like, and I was, like, and they all run for, like, Miss Asian America. And that was, like, something I had no idea. And so then I was, like, talking to her, like, I always, like, start by painting their face, and I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen to the painting. And then I learned that, like, these pageants are things that she goes to. And, like, I was like, hey, like, would you ever participate in one? And she's like, oh, I'm actually, like, not in the age range. Like, I'm no longer eligible. I think it's, like, 16 to, like, 20-year-olds or something. Wow. And then I just, like, kind of noticed from conversation, like, there was, like, this desire of, like, wanting to be in one, because if you go to so many, you know, as a spectator, and then she became, like, a beauty pageant queen, like, in the painting. And so, yeah, there's a lot of, like, going with the flow. Has she seen the painting?
Yeah.
You know what? I feel like okay, actually, this is on my to-do list this week, where I, like, send all the sitters their painting images. I've been meaning to do that sooner, but it's just been so hectic on my end. So I think a lot of sitters are, like, seeing their paintings for the first time because, like, the show just opened. And yeah, some people, like, have been sending me, like, freak out texts or something. But I did have, like, one sitter. He was a nurse. He's a COVID nurse. And he actually, like, flew all the way to LA to see the show. And I was kind of I was a little mind blown by that when I, like, met him in person at the opening.
Was he pleased? Is he happy?
Yeah, no, I think, it's just, like, the whole thing is, like, a bizarre, like, cause, like, you're a stranger and you sit on Zoom for 3 or 4 hours with another stranger. And then, like, and then you come to an art show. So I think for some people, it's just, like, a total, like, crazy experience that they're a part of, which is cool.
I love that.
How do you find them? How do you find these sitters? Because I've read that there's certain forums you go on. There's a Facebook group called Subtle Asian Traits, which has its private group, 1.9 million followers that all are all on forums, and they're talking about different issues. How these places you access, is there the rules you set for yourself of where you can find your sitters?
Yeah, honestly, I just feel like I'm a little bit of a cyber stalker at this point. I don't know. There's a lot of things that happen. Actually, no. So I feel like my Facebook, you know, like when you're constantly looking at particular themes, your Facebook starts to generate. And so I think my Facebook is extremely biased right now. Like, I think I clicked on, like, a couple of, like, feminist articles, and now it thinks, like, I'm just, like, only interested in, like, Asian Americans and, like, feminism or something. And so sometimes I have to log on someone else's, like, Facebook or Instagram just to see stuff that isn't, like, super, like, streamlined into, like, a little box corner. So I actually get recommended, like, a lot of, like, different groups to join just because my Facebook is so, like, it became, like, so specific algorithmically.
Yes.
But I mean, some Facebook groups that I have, you know, sort of found sitters from include things like, I remember when COVID first started, like, there was this thing that people were doing online where you could, like, adopt a nurse, and, like, a nurse would, like, post on Facebook, like, 5 things they wanted on Amazon. And then, like, you could, like, be like, oh, I'll adopt you, I'll send you 5 things. And so that was how, like, I got in touch with, like, a nurse who was working during COVID. I was like, oh, you could adopt a nurse, you know. Like, people were,
what did she want nursing. What did she want of Amazon? What did you get her?
No, so, like, you know, people would, like, I don't know, they wanted things like, I don't know, like an apron or just, like, gifts, basically.
And gifts. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Or, like, you know, when I made the bubble tea painting, I joined, like, a Facebook group called, like, Boba Tea Lovers. And then I met this girl who works at, like, a Kung Fu Tea in San Antonio, Texas. And then I just like sort of messaged her on Facebook and was like, hey, what do you sip for my painting? I think timing is also something, you know, like I think because a lot of people are trapped at home, like this sort of gave them something to do. I feel like if we weren't at a time where we're all trapped at home, this show probably would have been difficult to like happen, you know, like painting over Zoom. And then like, I don't know, like I also like Googled like sort of like I remember reading about like Asian, like they were forming like these Asian police cop groups because like the hate crimes had gotten so bad. And then I discovered there are like a ton of like Asian police fraternities like across the state, and they host like local get togethers to support each other, like when it comes to like recruiting police officers and stuff. So yeah, just kind of stumble and stalk.
And actually, in this night gallery show, there's a central piece, which to me seems like the largest work you've ever made. It's like 78 by 120 inches, and it's called Stop Asian Hate, from this year. Can you speak a bit about that painting? Because obviously that's a central kind of moment in the show, both physically, but also, I think, you know, with the ideas behind it.
Yeah,
so I feel like, well, I think for me, like when COVID first started, you know, like I was just talking to like friends, or like my mom came home one day from the supermarket and she was like, oh yeah, these people were like yelling at me to like go back to China. And then like, I was like talking to my professor on Zoom, like Tomas, and he was saying how like he was at a gas station, you know, and these people were like shouting like these really rude things at him. And then so at the beginning for me, I was like, wow, I'm like noticing these things happening to like people who are close to me. I wonder what it's like just across the whole, like across country, or like in places where you're not in a big city, you know? And then so then I started like sort of just like following like news online, and just like there's like a lot of like, you know, just anti-Asian hate crime news, mostly reported on like smaller local news channels, but they were like happening every week. And for me, like when the Atlanta shootings happened, that was like a whole year later, like March 2021. And then I had a lot of like other friends who called me and was like, wow, I can't believe this is happening. This is the first time I've like been hearing about it. And like, to me, that was like interesting because I was like, wow, this has actually been going on for a whole year, but like mainstream news media is like really only covering it like a whole year later. And I think there are also like a lot of Stop Asian Hate rallies and movements just happening across different cities across the U.S. And, you know, like I went to a couple myself. Like I went to one in Foley Square in New York that was pretty big, and like one in Boston, and then like a smaller local one in Hartford, Connecticut. But I think for me, what is interesting is I think like our parents' generation, like a lot of people come from like, I don't, like, war, basically, you know, a lot of people immigrated to the States because of, like, some sort of war situation, like the Vietnam War, the Korean War, or, like, coming out of, like, communist China. And so, like, the parents' generation, like, no one wants to, like, speak up, you know, against racism. And I think a lot of people, like, live, you know, like, just daily lives
just
encounter
tolerate it.
It
just, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, terrific. And so I think, yeah, the rallies were interesting for me because it was like a whole new, like the demographics were so specific. It's like young people and like millennials and Gen Z. And I don't know, I was just like really touched by, you know, there's just like a new generation who's like not afraid to voice out. And I think like sometimes like Asians are stereotyped to be seen as like submissive and quiet. And yeah, I was just like, oh, I would love to make a painting about this. And so, like, the painting sort of didn't come from, like, photographs. It was more just, like, memories of, like, people standing in particular places at these rallies or, like, scenes
that I
remember.
So you didn't have sitters for this one? This was all imagined?
No. I did have sitters. But, like, where people were positioned sort of came from, like, memory. And then I invited, like, local sort of just, like, people who live in the neighborhood to like participate. So it was like you could still be part of a rally, but like not in the form of like the large community, like large gathering, but like in a small sort of intimate way in the studio or something.
You're talking about the Atlanta spa shootings, and I think one of the most powerful paintings I've seen of yours is March 16th, Remembrance Mums, which is a still life of 8 white chrysanthemums. And chrysanthemums are representative of loss, of used at funerals and everything. And this is for like a memorial piece, because you was unable to get out to Atlanta to lay flowers yourself because the spa became like a memorial. But this was your offering to that horrific event.
Yes. Yeah, that was a really, I just remember that week I was like very, like usually, you know, I don't know. I think that week I was particularly disturbed. Like, you know, I've been following hate crimes for a year already, so I was already disturbed. But that week I felt really quite like, you know, I woke up every morning with like butterflies in my stomach, and I was like following this news like obsessively, almost like daily. And I was just like, why is this like, I don't know, affecting me so much? And also just like remember, like, you know, that week, like going out to like a supermarket or shopping mall, like I had a hood up all week because I was just like, oh, I just don't want to be seen, you know, like, but yeah, I made that painting and I was, I don't know. Yeah, I ended up like donating all the proceeds of that painting to the victims. And yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of a hard painting to talk about, but I'm not really like, I feel like I haven't even like totally processed it in a weird way, but I just wanted to do something. No, like
it's incredible. That's why I highlight it. It's incredible. And I think it's the title, the fact that they're chrysanthemums and it's mums for short. And most of the victims were mothers, and it's a really powerful piece. So, but it's a sensitive. Yeah.
Yeah. Also as a painting, I think it's a beautiful composition, that painting. I love the notepad on the table. I think it's just the whole perspective of it, you know, just as an artwork. It's a really beautiful work. Can we talk a bit about this idea of the self-portrait? Because that's another theme that recurs within your practice in recent times, including a kind of nude self-portrait that you did, which I loved the commentary on Instagram, which you were talking about the awkwardness and the kind of cringe-making nature of painting yourself.
Yeah. So I just think it's, I mean, I don't, like, it's funny because in like history of painting, there are so many nude women, but it's like mostly painted by men, and so they're really like elevated in this really beautiful idealistic way. And for some reason I thought when I painted myself I would feel that way too. Like, oh, like you know, you'd be like, you can like make yourself really beautiful. But I was actually inspired by, so like across from our window, like in our apartment, there's like this old man who like is pretty much always naked all the time. And like, you would really like see him go to the bathroom. And I'm just like, well, it's COVID. He's naked all the time. Like, I don't think it matters if he sees me naked all the time. But I think there was like a day where I just like waved at him from the window and he like waved back.
And you were both naked at this point?
Yeah, totally. It was hilarious. And this is like an old man. Like, I want to say he's like in his like 70s or 80s. But he clearly does not care because he's pretty much like naked all the time. I just like, I was like in my living room, like locked down, like naked, there's like a mirror. But I just remember when I was like painting myself, I was like oh I didn't know I had like moles there, you know. And then I was like, wait, is this a tick? And then I was like picking at it and I was like, oh no, just kidding, it's actually a mole.
Is this a tick? And you've been in lockdown for how long? It's been sucking on your arm for like weeks.
Totally. Or just like, I was like, oh, definitely quarantine 15, definitely gained some weight, you know. But I'm glad I did it. And I have like very conservative, like family members, or just, you know, just like a family who doesn't come from the art world. And I think they were just like really offended by this painting. They were like, you have to burn it. Like, no one can see this. Like it's embarrassing, blah, blah, blah. And like, I think all my uncles and aunts were like, oh, this is like tragic. Like, I can't believe you made this. But then I was like, no, this is going out into the world. And I'm like pretty proud of it.
It's amazing. So have your family seen your art? Has your family seen your art in person yet?
This is kind of, well, actually, that's kind of crazy. My mom is the only person who has seen my like work in person, just like, you know, like from going to like a show at school and like, or like this show. But most of my family, you know, still live in Asia, and they come, like, you know, my parents came from, like, really poor families, and so, like, the art world is not, like, it's just, like, such a big gap, you know? Like, I get people who ask me, especially, like, I get a lot of sitters who ask me, it's like, oh, do I have to, like, how much is it to come to your show? Like, they think you have to pay, like, an admission ticket, and you're like, oh, no, it's free, and they're like, it's free, and I'm like, yeah, just, like, show up. So then you realize, like, what a big disconnect there is. But, no, my family has not seen my paintings in person yet, except for my mom, probably my sister. But, you know, I'm going to be painting for a long time, so... There will be an opportunity.
Do they understand the concept of your success? Because now you have like a wait list for your work and there's a high demand and you're being reviewed in like the New York Times and lots of people are talking about you. Do they understand that how exciting that is?
I think that's actually a good thing. Like I remember like one time I told them, I was like, hey, Jerry Saltz like posted about me on his Instagram, and they're just like, who's that? And I'm just like, that's cool.
Keeps you down to earth. It's good.
Yeah, totally, totally. And also I'm like learning a lot of like just like a lot of things too. Just like, I don't know, like going through this or, you know, like the waitlist thing. Like I was like, I don't really understand how this works. Like that kind of thing. So I'm just like learning a lot of new things as I go along about like, I don't know, art world hierarchies. And also for me, it's like, I feel like knowledge is power. And right now I'm kind of like lacking. So sometimes I like don't even know like how to like go about things. But again, like I'm going to be hopefully doing this for a long time. So, you know, taking up as I go along.
And also I think it follows that theme I was talking about in the introduction about family, because I think the art world and your artist friends and also the galleries that you connect with and are working with are kind of there to support you too. And I love this idea of family, because particularly in your work, the way you kind of take us as viewers like on a journey with you, because, you know, we have the painting of you on your graduation, you know what I mean? Like all the way through to like you in your kitchen or bathroom, I'm not sure, but I think it's your kitchen where you have the cucumber on your eye, you know, and you're talking about mental health and all these kind of very personal topics. But I'm really love that idea that it's almost like we're all kind of growing together, like through your paintings or something.
Yeah, that's nice. I mean, I feel like paintings are like diaries too, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I'm just like even working with sitters, it's like, oh, I met this person today and I learned this about them, and just like, oh, this is what happened in my week this week. So yeah, there's definitely like a diaristic journalistic element to it. And I mean, like graduation, like we didn't really have like graduation, and so I kind of am really glad I made that painting, because I was like, I did go to my graduation. I didn't have a cap and gown, but I painted myself in one and I graduated. Yeah. So yeah, it was kind of funny like that.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant.
I love the energy in your works, Susan, because they have this, I mean, I can see a lot of Alice Neal in there, and you definitely cite your art heroes in a lot of works, and we'll come to one in a moment, but like Alice Neal, they have a kind of homely sitting feel. All of Alice Neal's works feel they're like in her house. You can actually get the sense of it, even if there's a chair, but even if it's lacking furniture or background, it's a homely feel. And you have that, so there's a sort of recognition in them and a warmth in your work.
Yeah, I feel, I don't know if you guys got to see it, but Alice Neal did have an exhibition at the Met, like, this summer. I think it might still be up. I'm actually not sure. But it was really great to get to see her work in person. And that homely feel, like when I was at the show, I was like, you're right. You can really like, it feels like we were just in your living room, because you can like smell it from the paintings. Something I remember reading about Alice Neal, which I thought was like really interesting, was that like, in order to get to her studio, like her sitters would have to walk through her kids' bedrooms in order to get to the studio. Nice. And so I think her kids were a little bit traumatized, because just like growing up, all these people were like coming in and out, or like she'd make them sit for her naked, but they were like, you know, like old, like they were like 17 or 15 or something. But yes, homely feel. No, I'm glad that is coming across in some way.
But your art heroes are again, cited in a lot of your works, and there's an amazing painting. You reference Jerry Saltz. You're actually reading Jerry Saltz's book, How to Be an Artist. It's a painting that you did in 2020 called Streetcars of Desires. And it's you sat there on what looks like a rug, but it's like a little pink island. And you're reading this book, but in the background, in the window, there's all these like train carts. And in the front, there's a train cart. But on each of the carts is an artist's name who is one of your heroes.
Yeah. You know, it was like the start of lockdown. That book had just come out, and it was very like motivating to get a copy of that book like during that time. And same. I remember, yeah, there is a page in there. I can't remember which page it is, but it's called like Streetcars or something. But basically, I mean, I didn't even like come up with this idea really, but it was just like make a drawing with like a bunch of streetcars with like all the artists who like influenced this year. Influenced you this mm-hmm. year, and then like you could do it like every year if you wanted. And I thought, I was like, oh, that's like such a poetic it's like, I don't know, like in the studio, like one of my favorite quotes is this Philip Guston quote and it's basically like when you're in the studio, like you have all these people around you, including like all the people who influence you, and they're always like whispering at your ear or whatever. And then, but like if you're really painting, like all these people kind of like go away, like they leave the room. And I think
I've got it here from one of YouTube. It says when you're in the studio painting, there are a lot of people in there with you, your teachers, friends, painters from history, critics, and one by one, if you're really painting, they walk out.
Yeah, totally. I love that quote. And I think really when you are, I mean, those days are like still pretty, they come rarely, but I think when you're really, really painting, like you entered this weird like meditative zone, and you just kind of like disappear into like you're like no longer in reality. I think the best paintings come when you're like in that place. And the problem with working with sitters is that you can't be in that place.
Because you're communicating, because you're performing with them to get information and to keep them like alert and everything.
Totally. So like there are times where I'm like, oh, I wonder, like this painting is probably not the best painting can ever be, because you're like never actually in that zone.
Wow. So the big breakthrough for you though was you went to see an artist's exhibition in Bilbao at the Guggenheim that changed everything for you.
Totally. Yes. I don't know, like that I have like kind of traditional parents. They were like, we didn't like pay all this money to send you to an Ivy League school so that you could be an artist and like make drawings. And then so like in junior year of college, I like had gone to Bilbao. It was like a study trip, like off semester study trip. And I remember seeing like David Hockney's like the super large landscapes, you know, the ones that you can like walk into. And I was just like totally mind blown. And then after that, I was like, oh, I'm going to double major. I'm going to do painting. I'm going to like make it all happen, you know? That show totally changed my life. And I think that's why like painters should, you know, like I think paintings have the ability to do that, you know? Totally changed someone's life.
But you started with landscapes after that. That's how the painting happened, but and then went on to portraiture.
Yeah, totally. Yes. I guess landscapes. It's just like, it's kind of got that Alice in Wonderland thing again, you know, you like can go wherever you want to go. And I feel like for me, it's like these journeys or like, you know, the kids who like go to Narnia and they like go through all this craziness. And then when they come out, they're like a different person. But then like where they end up is exactly where they started. And I feel like Alice in Wonderland is that. I feel like Dr. Seuss is kind of like that. It's like you go through these landscape paintings and then when you come out, you're like basically in your studio, like you haven't left, but like your perspective is a little different.
It's kind of like a portal into another reality that is your reality. That's kind of full on. Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's a painting that you made in April or around that time of you kind of washing your hands, and you've got loads of, hand soap on shelves. And I love that. It's my favourite painting by you. And I love that kind of imagined like bathroom mirror being this kind of glass window or chapel arch.
It's like a church.
And, yeah. Can you speak a bit about that work in particular, just because it's one of my faves?
Yeah, no, that painting was actually really, like, really fun to make. And I actually did go to a Walmart supercenter to pick up a lot of get some inspiration of the different soaps.
Bottles and colors and everything.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that was all still there, because everyone was like stockpiling. So you were able to get a few selections.
Yeah, I'll tell you why I thought it was funny is because there were so many different soaps. However, there's only certain soaps that are actually antibacterial and disinfectant. So the soaps that were kind of left over were all the ones that were it doesn't actually do anything.
It just smells nice.
Totally. Yeah. And I actually did buy quite a few. And I just remember at the checkout counter, the Walmart sales lady was like, you know, you can get six packs where they're all the same for way cheaper, right? And I was like, no, they all have to be different. And then I had a receipt, and this is really bad because I did end up returning a lot of them, and I think this lady was just what the hell.
Although it's probably good though, because otherwise it just goes to waste, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But I love that painting because I feel like you're about to disclose something. Like there's something about, even though you've got the mask on, I feel like you're about to while you're washing your hands, kind of whisper something to us. There's something about that energy in your work which is really compelling for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think I remember purposely shaping the window like a chapel window because it was a time where soaps and cleanliness are the only things that are going to save you right now or something. Mm. But also I just think women in general are sort of brought up kind of to be thinking like that almost all the time. Mm. That's just the society just expects you to be clean or shave your armpits, to be just pristine all the time. And I feel like that also creates a lot of pressure, or just how you go into the world is a little different. Mm. But COVID and soaps.
How long do your paintings take?
I try to make a painting a week, but I am learning that to slow down, it's good to slow down. It's good to slow down just for your mental health, you know.
Why? What do you mean? In what way?
I think for me, there's some artists who will spend a whole year on a painting, but they'll work on multiple paintings at a time. I feel like the way I work is just one painting after. It just feels like diary pages. And actually working slow is counterintuitive to me, but I think it would be healthy for me to just be able to think more, just, I don't know, give myself more time to be more intentional or something.
I guess but you're driven because you're having ideas. You're just having loads and loads of ideas, and you sketch a lot. I've seen a lot of your sketch. I own a sketch of yours, which is I love.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, yes, I love that one. I do.
A little drawing of Kalima. That's his
Totally.
He was a sitter. Yeah. And he's wearing a hat with math on, which we'll have to get to because I want you to talk about that. But these paintings of yours, you've got lots of ideas, but there's in your manifesto, or a manifesto of yours, is you say, I paint in search for the meaning of home. What does that mean, and what is home?
Yeah, that is a big question. I think I just had a very like I moved around a lot as a child, and also just grew up. So like I grew up in Hong Kong until I was 12, and Hong Kong was coming out of like British colonization at the time. And so, you know, just like you notice a lot of hierarchy, like I noticed a lot of hierarchies, like growing up, like, you know, if you spoke English, you wouldn't get a parking ticket. If you spoke English, you could live in like certain areas, like certain neighborhoods that like, you know, regular Chinese people were like not allowed to live in. Or like if you are like coming from Hong Kong versus if you're coming from like mainland China, for example, there's a lot of like on the ground racism. And then I sort of, my parents like made sure I went to like, you know, they like wanted me to go to like a British school where I could like learn English so that, you know, when you come back, like you just are able to get a, like a job, you know, like a better job. Like that kind of thing. And then I spent a lot of time. I actually lived in England for like, I want to say 9 years.
You went to boarding school here, didn't you, from the age of 12?
Yeah, it was totally crazy. No, it was like kind of like accidental. But yeah, I did. And, you know, like for me, I was one of like the only like minorities like in my year. There's probably like three or, you know, like in a class of 60, there's like maybe like three or four of you. And so you really like notice like, so I remember I was like in the dining room one day and I like picked up my bowl of soup and I was like drinking it out of the bowl because that's what you did at home. And then I got like sent out of the dining room because it's like you're not using a spoon. And so like, you know, you learn to like assimilate really quickly and just sort of thinking. I mean, and then I came to America for college, and in America, like the way race is talked about in the news is just like so different from like other parts of the world. It's just very apparent, you know, it's like in the news every day. So for me, it's just like, I think it's like, you like see yourself in a particular way. Like maybe you're like, oh, like I'm just like a human who like has had the privilege of living in all these places. But I think like the outside world like would prefer to like box you into like, cause they're like, oh, I don't really understand you. You know, you're like, they like, I feel like society sometimes wants to like put you into these boxes so that it's like easy to understand you and like easy to label you. And I think painting is like there is like that constant sort of like, I don't know, dialogue of like who you are versus like who the world wants you to be.
So it's a search for identity, I guess.
Yeah. And I think a lot of like Asian kids who like live in the Western diaspora like really struggle with that. And I think that's why like Subtle Asian Traits, the Facebook group, has 1.9 million people in it, because I think everyone is sort of like toying with that. Like, I am this, but the world wants me to be X. And like, how do you like come to terms with that, or just come to terms with it yourself? And I
feel there
like
is a gap in the representation, isn't there, of East Asian people in art. And what you're doing is a gift for, you know, representation, for diversity, and that also feels like it's a massive push as for your practice. That's what drives you.
Yeah, totally. And I think just like going forward, like international, like you see how fast COVID spread and like international travel, and I think the world is just going to become like more and more sort of like integrated, you know, like even just like racially. Like I remember like I think it was National Geographic like came out with a cover of like what America will look like in 2050, and like everyone's like mixed race or something. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's an interesting time to be alive. Totally.
You know, I was thinking last night, I actually posted a picture on my Instagram of Frida Kahlo's painting where she cut all her hair off after having broken up with Diego Rivera. And you see kind of like scissors in her hand and all the bits of hair kind of on the floor around her. And I've been looking at some of your work, and there's the painting that's in the new show called I Am Not the Kung Flu. And for me, what really excites me is that I feel like art has the power. You know, you as an artist can make these images that are so relevant to that moment in time politically. And can you talk a bit about that painting? Because I know that was kind of inspired by numerous experiences of kind of Asian hate and racism that were experienced not just by you necessarily, but also through the sitters that you were speaking to. So those kind of communications. Because I think it's a really good thing for people to remember the power of painting in, you know, in this way for social change.
Yeah, so I was reading, you know, just online how there's like there's this uptick of like Asian Americans buying guns to protect themselves. And like I remember in a Facebook group, I saw this post that this lady made, which at first, like, you're like, that's kind of funny, of just like all these things that you could buy to protect yourself. And you're like, yeah. And it's just like pepper gel, pepper spray, like all these personal alarms, like bear spray. And when I first saw the post, I was like, that's pretty funny. But then you see there's like hundreds of comments, and like you click on it, people are like actually buying these things or sharing like what they've bought and like where to get on sale items for some of these. And then like Googling on Amazon or being on Amazon, I was like, I remember like the first, there was like a bestseller and it was like a small handgun. And I don't know if it was like a real handgun or like some sort of like BB, like, you know, a pretty powerful gun. Mm. But I remember seeing like there was like 20,000 five-star reviews and it was only like $66. And I was like, wow, you can like buy a gun like on Amazon and get it primed to your house in 2 days now. It's like one of those, and then just like reading like sort of, it kind of felt like a survey of like what people were buying during this time, because they were like so afraid of like being assaulted, whether it's like actually being assaulted, living in neighborhoods that have high crimes, or like personal paranoia. And so I wanted to make a painting about that. And also just like, because I was living in Connecticut at the time, I actually had like three friends. They were like, hey, is it okay if I get this like pocket knife sent to your address? Because like, it's illegal to get it sent in like Massachusetts or New York, but it's like not illegal in Connecticut. So then like, I remember like just like opening my mailbox and I like got like a knife like mailed to me. And I was just like, wow, I got like knives mailed to me during this time. It's kind of crazy. Yeah, so I wanted to make a painting sort of like documenting like some of the things that people, that Asian Americans were buying at this time. And one of the things I stumbled upon that I thought was interesting was like there were people who were buying like these feng shui mirrors. It like deflects bad energy.
You put and it in your front door, don't you? Is it that
yeah, way? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was like, oh, like people are, it's just like a cultural, like it's just fascinating. You're like, oh, this is something that people are also buying, you know? And then it was the last painting I made in the show. And, you know, I wanted to add the Zoom buttons because that was, I felt like that was how I was like interacting with most of my sitters.
Can spend a lot of time in front of your paintings because there's lots of things to decipher and unravel. And it reminds me, who is also your contemporary from Colombia, which is a former Talkart guest and was also in the show in Margate, Breakfast Under the Tree, which I curated, called Oscar Yi Ho. And you're really good friends. And the elements in his work is that it makes you spend a lot of time in it because there's lots of codes in there. There's lots of messages, things that he wants you to understand, things that he's not interested in you understanding there for him. And I feel like it's the same. There are the same elements in your work that you follow those themes.
Yeah, no. Okay, so Oscar and I are in this residency right now called Silver Art Project. I haven't seen him yet, but I'm sure I'll run into him very soon. But we did take this painting class together when we were at Columbia with Michael Berryhill. So I don't know if you know Michael Berryhill's paintings, but if you see his paintings, you can see like the resemblance coming from like Oscar's paintings too, like in a really great way. Okay. But no, he's great. He's like, I think it's very like, it's difficult to be an artist like at a young age. And I think he's really like, you know, like acing it, you know? So there's a lot of respect. Yeah, totally. Symbolism. I don't know. I feel like it may have happened like by accident, but
You mentioned that residency that you're a part of, which is in the World Trade kind of complex. Can you speak a bit about how important having people believe in you when you're emerging like you are? Because, for example, you also had the Hopper Prize not long ago, and you've kind of had moments where people have kind of said, you know, we think you're great.
Keep going.
You know, keep doing what you're doing. How important has that been for you, that kind of encouragement?
I think it's, I feel very lucky and I'm very grateful. I feel very lucky. I think the part where I notice it makes a huge difference for me is when I approach sitters, they'll be like, oh, like you know, you're being like sort of like, I don't want to say like backed, but then people are more like, it's just like easier for them to be like, yeah, I would love to be painted by you. And so I think having those supporters has been really great for like allowing me to paint or like work with people that I want to, that might, you know, like maybe like if I didn't have the sort of support, like people would not be as interested or something.
I think also though, being a sitter must be quite a vulnerable thing in itself.
A bit
like you're making yourself vulnerable when you're painting yourself. For them, it's probably quite a scary thing, particularly if you're talking about, you know, political issues, you know, personal issues, all of these things. So I think maybe to almost be legit, you know what I mean? To be like validated by some kind of art system or what have you. Maybe it does just give people more confidence.
Totally. Yeah. Like, for example, like in the fall, I'm working with a nonprofit organization called Apex for Youth, and where it's a program where they connect like adult mentors with like middle school, high school Asian students who come from low income families. And I feel like a project like that, like I definitely was only, I want to say like I was only able to get it, but I was able to like do something like that because like I had so much support from, you know, like other sort of like people or organization institutions. But I think it's very hard to be an artist. So especially like a young artist, and to be able to like do this full time is pretty surreal. So yeah, no, I'm very grateful for the support. It's like, I think it is very important.
Yeah, totally. That support has to be there for emerging artists. Can we just talk about materials quickly? You paint on canvas?
Yes.
Do you buy it, stretch it yourself? Is it primed?
I used to like cut the wood and build all my canvases by myself, stretch them and everything. I don't do that anymore because it's quite like hard on your hands and stuff.
Right.
Now, like, I have a friend who makes the canvases for me. He happens to be like the wood shop monitor guy at FIT. he's been great. He's helped me make a lot of canvases. And then when I get them, I sort of like do the oil prime like myself on my, like, you know, like two coats of like oil prime or something. And then it's just like oil paint and like linseed oil and like Galkid.
But it's not just oil paint with you, because that's why I think your work's so interesting, is the visceralness of it. The reason I was, you know, the animation I was describing, or the kind of aliveness of the figures, it's all because of this kind of impasto, like the heavy
depth
application
to it.
Of paint. And it could almost just be paint. You know, we spoke to Ralph Rugoff the other day from the Hayward Gallery, the director there, and he was saying how Peter Doig mentioned this idea of paintings actually just being paint, you know, even if they are figurative. And with yours, they're alive, you know, there's like the blood is running through these sitters because of the way you apply paint. Where, how did that style in a way like grow and develop in your work?
Yeah, one of those artists that like whenever I go to see it, I'm just like totally mind blown. Like Talar, I spend a lot of time just like up close in front of Talar paintings, being like, how does he get them so thick and so luscious and so shiny? Like that's not varnish. That's like something he's like doing to the paint. And Dana Schutz also has a way of making her paints like really, really thick. And that's kind of like where I want to go. But I am still sort of like figuring it out. It's like a science experiment. Like you have to keep playing around. And honestly, I'm like not there yet. I'm like not even close. And that's like something I want to go, like I need to like keep sort of like exploring, like how do they do that?
They're amazing. There's the depth to them. And it makes me think of a story I heard once about Frank Auerbach, who's a British painter, and how his paint is so thick. And some of his paintings are like 50 years old, and they will start coming up in the auctions. And when they're doing the tests on it, the paint hasn't even dried. Underneath
That's
the surface,
amazing.
The paint is still wet. It's taken so long to dry out. And I feel like your paintings have this sort of, you must never, like if anyone can ever get close to your work, they really need to look at the surfaces, because you can't get it from images online. There is such a surface intensity and such a texture to your paintings.
and a joy within it, I think. There's like this passion within it. So even if your, you know, your self-portraits as one theme might be introspective and might have a kind of tension to them or an intensity, I think there's still a vibrant joy in them, you know, because you can see how much you love painting.
Totally. I do love painting. Like, I'll be at dinner sometimes and then I'll be like Googling like mediums or something. And then people at dinner will be like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so embarrassed. But yeah, no, I guess like, who's the other artist? Mark Grotjen? I don't think I'm pronouncing it. You know how he uses like cake? He uses these like cake tips to like do some of his paintings. But I do love thick paintings. Actually, I'm kind of frustrated because I feel like a lot of times when I'm making the paintings, they're very like shiny and very thick. And then what happens like over time is the painting dries and the turpentine kind of leaves. And things actually like deflate a little and look really matte. But that's one of those things that I'm like, I'm going to figure it out, you know? And like,
What's it like for you now when a work sells? So like the work that was in Margate has now gone to a collector and then you don't get to see it again, you know, in the near future. How are you dealing with that? The kind of way the studio is maybe becoming emptier faster than it would have done before?
That's really interesting. No one's really asked me that. I actually am not as attached to my paintings as people might think. I actually, like with this show, I like was living with them for like 9 months. And by the end, I was like, I just cannot look at these anymore. Like if I, literally during Insta, I was like, oh my God, I'm seeing these again. I'm literally going to throw up. Like, so I don't know.
You're like, leave now.
Yeah,
I'm done.
Totally.
Go and do your thing in the world.
Get out.
Totally.
Yeah. You've grown up, get out. You've graduated.
Yeah. I think, although sometimes I feel like for me, like the landscape paintings, I'm just like, it doesn't matter. Anyone can collect them. I don't really like mind. I'm very happy that all these paintings find homes too. I think with the figure paintings, it starts to like, there is like an element of ethics, you know, like sometimes with some paintings, I'm like, I just don't think this painting can be sold for a profit. Like, you know, there's a painting of a veteran in this show that I'm like, I just cannot profit off this. It's just not right. So I'm like that, for example, I like worked it out. I was like, I'm going to donate it back to like the sort of veteran organization where I met the sitter. So I think working with sitters, you do have like, I don't know, I think of like ethics a lot, or just like, who owns the work, like, could suddenly become important. I'm like, you know, it's like, oh, I think it would be great if some Asian American collectors could have these paintings in their homes, especially if they have like kids, because then it's like a way of like seeing yourself. But like when I was painting landscapes, I was like, it doesn't, you know, like anyone, I didn't really have to think about that at all. And I think working with people, there is like, it adds a little element of like complication.
It's kind of a responsibility or something.
Totally.
To the sitter, yeah. Well, I really recommend that everyone who doesn't know your work yet spend some time like looking into Susan's, not just the work itself, but also the kind of thoughts behind the work, because things like that, there's one that will obviously relate to Russell, but you did a painting of Tadashi, who ended up becoming an actor for like 9 years or something. And there's all these amazing kind of narratives that are so sort of rich, these passionate stories behind the work.
Well, the Yang Gang is one that springs to mind. And that's what Kalima, the drawing I had, was a study for the Yangling. And they all have these hats with math written on. So Andrew Yang was a Democratic in the presidential race to become president, for the first Asian American for like 50 years or something crazy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you made this was a huge portrait you did of lots of characters with these hats on and the word math, which I can never really work out what it actually means.
Yeah, I think the hat was supposed to be like a spoof on Trump's like Make America Great Again, but I think it stood for like, make Americans think harder.
We all need math hats. We all need that. Let's all go and get them. No,
that's kind of, but yeah, no, I think it was, for me, I was like, oh, it's not every day that like an Asian American like runs for president. And I mean, I've like thought about like, and Kamala Harris as well. But I think like I had gone to a couple like of signature gatherings, you know, of rallies, sort of like these political you know, campaigns and stuff. And the demographics of people who were at this were really, really fascinating to me. A lot of people who were not politically active before sort of became politically active from this. Maybe it's because his ideas are so sort of like, I don't know, maybe too liberal, totally out there, a bit idealistic. But yeah, I was like, oh, you know, it's not every day that like an Asian guy runs for president. And I just sort of wanted to make a painting. And it was like during like a voting year, that was just like, it was like a way of participating in a way.
It's great. And when you started it, he was still in the race. And when you were halfway through, he dropped out. And suddenly you were like, yeah. Oh, how do I change this painting? What do I do with this painting now?
Yes. Oh my God. That's so true. I'm so glad that you like got to read that. But yeah, I was like making this painting, and halfway I was like, oh shit, like now what? And then suddenly it became like a really sad painting. And also I like was painting. I remember painting like these buttons, and like he had just done like New Hampshire and Iowa. And then I sort of like added that into the painting. I was like, oh, those are the only places he got to. And then he dropped out. But yeah, it was definitely, I had a lot of fun making that painting too. It feels like very far away right now, but I know it wasn't like that far.
Yeah. Well, before we get into our last questions, I just want to ask you one more thing. In 2016, 2017, you were a studio assistant for Shara Hughes.
Yes, that was a year. I had a year where it was like right before I went to art school and after my first job out of college, where I spent the year working as an artist assistant, and I got to work for her, which I feel very, very grateful about, because, and also I got to work for like a couple of female artists who were at the Elizabeth Foundation for the Arts. I don't know if
What's
you know
that?
This.
What's the Elizabeth? Yeah, I don't know that.
They're like a residency in this building in Midtown. There's like 70 artists in the building. So it's, yeah, the only thing is it's in Manhattan. So like, you know, like maybe you're like restricted size wise on like what you can work with. Right. But I think definitely being in Shara's studio totally like changed my life, because it was the first time I was seeing like, oh, this is like what it's like to be a working artist. And I was also just like very, like she would make like a painting a week, and like I was just like, how can someone make work that fast and so intuitively? It was also a very fun studio to work with, because she works with so many different colors.
Mm. Well, there's a Hockney vibe through her landscapes, aren't there?
Yeah. And her studio was like not in a bad way. It was like pretty small, considering like the works she was making were so large. Mm. So I was like, oh, this, you know, like if she can make work in this space, it's like, you know, anyone should be able to make work in any space.
You also witnessed her success as well, because when you first started, she was kind of selling. And then in the process, that was kind of her kickoff year. So you're witnessing an artist suddenly having a lot of attention and want of her works of art. And they're getting flipped all over the place at auction and stuff. So that must have been quite an interesting thing to observe.
Yeah, I think when I first started, she had just done like the Marlborough show and like, you know, it was like working with Rachel Uffner. And then it was like kind of crazy to be able to like go to the Whitney Biennial and be like, and then go to the studio like after that. And it definitely was different, you know? So I feel really lucky I got to work with her. And her boyfriend, Austin Eddy, also makes paintings.
They're both like partner. I didn't know that.
They both make, they're both very like inspired by Talar as well, but they're very nice. Like they're very like, you know, sometimes artists have like, I mean, as someone who like worked for a lot of artists, sometimes artists have like really big egos, but these guys are like really down to earth. So
I actually met Shara because of Catherine Bernhardt. She was really good friends with her before Catherine was famous. So back in about 2013 or something, and Austin and her both came to London to meet me, and we hung out. And then I went to Shara's studio when you must have been working there.
No way.
It was exactly that time.
2016,
17. Carl Friedman and I went to visit her because we wanted to show her. And Rachel had a big kind of solo show at the time, I think, or just maybe closed or something. And it was at a time where before she quite, yes, Rachel Uffner, who's amazing. And it was just before she'd kind of, I think that show had sold out, and then everyone was getting interested in her, and I think we just caught her a bit late in a way, but I love her work. And it's interesting thinking about the colour palette as well, because she's such an amazing colourist. You know, if you think of some of the more recent painters that we've spoken to, like Lisa Yaskavage and Dorong Langberg, but actually Shara Hughes is a great colourist. Mm. And I think you are too. I think you have a natural mm-hmm. kind of approach to the way that you choose colour, yeah. You know, and it can really make you feel different emotions. You know, it's an interesting tool that in yeah. itself.
Actually, it's funny. That reminds me, in my grad school interview with Gregory Aminoff, the painter, and Aliza Niesenbaum, I had submitted a portfolio of landscapes because that was what I was making at the time. And in my grad school interview, they're like, you realize your paintings look like almost identical to hers, right? Like, you're basically copying her. And I like was a bit like apologetic about that. And I was like, and that's why I'm coming to grad school, because like I need to get out, you know, totally.
Find your own thing. Yeah.
Totally, like find your own voice and stuff. Yeah. That, I guess that's the only danger about like working as an artist assistant is like your work could totally morph into like their work because you see their work so much.
Yeah, and it's working. It's like people are getting it and appreciating it, and you're like, oh, okay. You know who also loves Tal art is Rose Wiley. She cites Tal art as someone that she really responds to. All right, so we ask all of our guests, as you know, as you've heard Talk Art from the beginning, you're the OG for us.
Yes,
we
ask wait for it.
The same questions. If
what's your favorite color and one painting art heist?
Yes. So, Gunnar, so what's your art heist? Any work of art in the world, what would it be and why?
Okay, so I think it would have to be the Katharina Van Hemmensen painting, you know, the self-portrait. She was like a Flemish painter from the 1550s. And women were not allowed to be artists at the time. And so the only reason she was able to paint was because her dad taught her how to paint. And I don't even know if she was just like if she was a hardcore painter, but I think that's one of the like earliest self-portraits I've seen of like a female self-portrait. It's pretty cool. And also I have to say another painting that always that I always come back to is Matisse's The Red Studio. Mm. I don't even know that one at the MoMA.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
It's just like this guy woke up one day and like that decision to make a painting like so flat and just like all red. She's like, what were you smoking that day, you know?
He's on your train, isn't he? He's on your Jerry Saltz train of artists that you feel connected to. His name is down there, as well as Aliza Nissenbaum is down there, and obviously Hockney and Bonnard. These are all artists that are really important to you.
Totally.
Hopefully they've left the room so that you can.
Yes, hopefully I'm. You know who I am.
Swept them all out. Yeah.
Recently, I've become really obsessed with John Bradby. He's an English painter.
Oh, right.
Oh my God! Yes.
Yeah.
I know. He's kind of almost like kitchen sink, isn't he? Like.
Yeah.
What's
really weird about that?
Those bathroom sink paintings are really good.
Yes. John Bradby, I learned about because I was dating a guy. Actually, no, I wasn't dating him. I was dating somebody else, but we used to hang out a lot. Nothing ever happened between us, actually, but nothing physical. But we were like hanging out a lot with each other, and he'd started to collect them. And that's why I know these works really well. I learned about them in the kind of mid-2000s.
Yeah.
They're amazing, John Bradby.
Yeah, I have yet to see them in person, but I have like five of his books. And I'm like, I need to go to London or somewhere. I need to find these works, you know.
Oh, wow. I'm going to look this up.
And they were quite inexpensive like 15 years ago. I discovered it when we first met Russ. That was exactly the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like he's underrated.
There's a Vietnamese artist as well on one of your trains called Lee Pho.
Yeah.
And this is an artist that's been overlooked, but is incredible. These flower arrangements and these nudes. This is an artist that through you I've suddenly discovered.
Yeah, like I think Lee Pho is like really, like, I don't know, not that I feel a connection, but you know, like he's from Vietnam. He went to school in Paris at the time. And I think he studied with, you know, I think he was like in part of the circle with like Bonnard and people, like they were somehow connected, but he like ended up going to back to Vietnam, and he was like painting French Impressionism in Vietnam at a time where it was like just, like not a thing, you know, and just like thinking about like him and like his, like them traveling then would have been on like boats and stuff, like, or like no airplanes or something. So yeah, I don't know, like finding a connection there or something.
Mm. Brilliant.
The other question we ask every guest, as you know, is what is your favorite color?
Oh, right, right. You know, I think I hit like COVID rock bottom when I bought a pair of like glitter Crocs, like these silver glitter Crocs. And I literally were wearing them every single day while I was making the show. So I don't know, some sort of like silver glitter maybe.
You still got them? You still wear them?
I do. I still wear them. Now I'm just like, I used to be like, there's no, you're not going to catch me dead in Crocs ever. And now I just run around in these glitter Crocs all day.
They're really comfortable, aren't they? They're so comfortable.
They are very comfortable.
I think also there's something about COVID that made everyone want to wear glitter.
Yes, totally.
You know what I mean?
Like,
or dress bright. I feel like every time I go out now and it's someone's birthday or something, everyone's like really dressing up.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, it's like, that's it's so, almost like the 1920s again.
That's so funny that you say that, because I've noticed just recently, it's like a lot of people are wearing glitter masks, and also just like through research, like a lot of times when there's war happening or like in war zone countries, like people wear a lot of glitter. And in my mind, I'm like, roaring 20s happened after the Spanish flu. So like, 2023 is going to be party central.
It's going to be glitter,
like,
year of the glitter.
See you there.
And even, even today, our friend Stella McCartney has launched glitter kind of boots that are all in one. These, even the heel of the shoe, it's like the whole thing is just like a lump of glitter. They're amazing.
That's
and
so
like,
cool.
I think that's all part of it. And obviously they're eco-friendly, so we like. So.
What is the best advice you've had so far with your art?
The best, well, I think the most, honestly, it's just about the work. Like, the work is like the only thing that matters. All that other stuff sort of just like follows with or comes after. I don't know. In my mind, that's about, you just have to make a lot of work, and the work has to be really good.
Simple. Just be brilliant. That's the advice.
That really
just do
advice.
The work, you know, totally.
Love it.
Amazing.
I love how driven you are. It's brilliant. You inspire me so much.
Oh, thank you.
You're like kind of rock and roll almost. It's good.
I want to say likewise. And I'm really excited for your book. I feel like I'll finally have a chance, like time to like read it. And I'm like a massive fan of this podcast, as you know. So it's like very surreal to be on here.
Well, we're a massive fan of yours, and this has been absolutely wonderful. And I think everyone listening is going to, who don't know your work already, is going to be very excited to discover it and see more.
And actually, I've just remembered the first time we asked you to come on, it was probably a year ago or something, and you said you weren't ready yet and you wanted to do it when you were ready. And I love that now you are.
Yeah.
Because I really wanted to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. I know. I was like, I don't think I'm talk art worthy now, but no, it's.
I will be one day.
Yeah, totally.
Well, you got there. Good times.
Well, what about you guys? What are you guys up? Will you be in New York anytime soon? Or?
Well, we've just found out in the news that November time, I think, we're able to fly over there without having... Well, because at the minute, we're not allowed to fly over there. So, yes, there will be plans. I mean, at some point, we'd like to remount some live events that we were planning to do when I was there doing my play start of last year.
And also the American version of Talk Art the Book had a different color cover. It was bright yellow, and we really wanted to do a few book events and things like that.
We'd be in the States.
We're gonna come
don't
back.
Don't worry.
And we're gonna be hanging out with you, hopefully at your residence.
Exactly. No, I definitely want to meet you guys in real life.
IRL, it'd be IRL very, very
totally.
Soon. Totally. Well, everyone listening, for all images, please go to @talkart on Instagram, and you're on Instagram as well, Susan.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what's your handle?
It's Susan M. B. Chen. Well, yes, my middle initials, like M for like, I don't know, more, and B for balloons or something. Yes.
Susan Moore Balloons Chen.
Amazing. Susan M. B. Chen. Love that. Well, thank you so much. It's been the best hour ever. Loved it. And we'll be back very soon. And make sure you go to Night Gallery if you're in Los Angeles.
Yes, check
it
out.
If you can't, check
it
all out online.
It's on until
really
October 23rd. Oh, I have one question for you, go. You said that the guy who makes your stretches for you works at FIT.
Yes.
What is FIT? I've written it down. I'm like, question mark.
The Fashion Institute of Technology. It's a university in New York.
Thank you, because I've got big question marks around that going, like, I don't know what it is.
Yeah,
I've only
ever heard of MIT, not FIT. But
what's MIT then?
Massachusetts, I think, isn't it?
Yes.
It's like
the
very
Massachusetts
great, prestigious...
Institute of Technology in Boston.
I mean, it's like really classy. Amazing. It's where you go. And then if you get published by MIT Press, you're like a legend. Well, oh dear.
Let's aim for that. All right, everyone, big love.
Thanks for listening.
Take care. Thanks, Susan.
Bye. Thank you.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamond and Russell Tovey.
Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in today's episode, with music by Jack Northover.
Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts.
Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.